We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, hello, and welcome into the PHNX Suns podcast brought to you by the DraftKings Sportsbook app. I'm Lindsay Smith. I've got Saul Bookman, Gerald Bourget, and Espo here with me today. The whole squad.
Say
Gerald's
with
back
some,
from vacation.
Say it with some passion, Lindsay. Hello, hello, everybody.
Like, oh, this is another ad read. Here you go. These guys are here. I'm not happy. Let's just live a life full of disappointment.
The whole crew.
I'm just in a chill mood right now. Like, life is good. The Suns are on a 16-game win streak. Had a fun game coming up tomorrow. I'm just in a good spot. So, shall we talk about some things?
Well, that would make for a more interesting show than
yeah.
not.
Oh, so, yeah. Goodbye, everybody.
Gerald is here, by the way. He hasn't said anything, but Gerald is back from New Mexico, so...
Yeah, I got nothing on that one. I'm really missing the green chili margaritas right about now.
I bet. You didn't bring us home any leftovers,
nothing.
Did you?
I brought home red and green chili, actually.
What? Oh. I've never...
So, well, play your cards right, and we'll see.
Whoa. Is that a threat or a promise?
Yes. The threat of not having any green chili is a threat.
I'm in.
Well, Devin Booker was named Western Conference Player of the Week for Week 6, which congratulations to Devin. Well-deserved. His numbers for the week are 30 points per game, 3.5 assists per game, 53% from the field, 56% from the three-point line, and 90% from the free throw line. And, of course, the Suns went 4-0 during that stretch. Thoughts?
They got How did the national media do this to? Good one by. I'm glad he is.
They got it right, which was nice. I mean, Steph Curry and LeBron both put up big numbers, but the Lakers were like 2-1, and so I think the team record for Devin went his way, and I think they got it right this time. So hooray! I mean, he had a 50-50-90 week shooting wise, like he was insane, and we're starting to see the Devin Booker we've been missing for the first part of the season, at least
56% from three is huge.
Yeah,
for him too. Like that's been, I feel like the last part of his offense to kind of come to fruition, what everybody expected, because when he came into the league, we heard, oh, he's like a Steph or not like a Klay Thompson. Like that was the big thing when he was drafted. And all of a sudden he becomes so much more than a 3-point shooter, but didn't ever reach the proficiency that people thought from the 3-point line in games. I mean, obviously he did it in 3-point contests, but I feel like this is the next step. We're seeing him hit that on a consistent basis, and the sky's the limit for this dude. And it's good that the national media and recognized him for this. I believe this is the fourth time he's been named Western Conference Player of the Week. So
yeah, he's shooting a career high 41% from three on 6 attempts per game. So that's, like you were saying, the last piece of his game to fall into place as a scorer, kind of what we've been waiting on, and it's all coming into place now.
He just looks like he has that look, you know, like he looks like a top 10 NBA player. He looks like, you know, when the way he carries himself, the way he moves around the court, the way he tries to take over games at certain points, he has that Kobe-esque look to his game now. And I think that's what's separating him from you know, Devin Booker of even last year. You know, there was a certain part when he got to the playoffs where, oh, okay, there's that guy. You know, the Clippers in game one of the Western Conference Finals is the first thing that pops into my mind. But he's learning how to be dominant, not just a pro, but dominant. And once he figures that out completely, he's going to be a superstar.
Hey, I mean, he's the equalizer. He's going to come stone-faced, come in there, and just take care of you. He's going to take care of business that way. And the Kobe-esque, I think, gets overplayed with a lot of guys, but with Devin, it feels true. And I obviously, as a Suns fan, I didn't have the greatest of respect for Kobe, but watching Devin do it and going, okay, I probably should have respected Kobe a little bit more because this is damn cutthroat and fun to watch. So I finally kind of understand Lakers fans a little bit more.
I think one of the things that maybe to your point of just being like the Kobe thing is overdone, I think as fans, maybe that's where it feels like that. But one of my favorite things about Devin and his game and just his career overall is how pretty much, at least from season two on, the respect from players around the league has always been there. So it may not have been this glaring thing for everyone else, like, oh yeah, this guy's got it. He's got that killer mentality. He's got that edge. But everybody in the league who ever played against him or knew of him knew that before the rest of the world knew it. And I think that speaks a lot of volume.
Well, you say second year. I mean, the Be Legendary moment was March of his first season.
That's true.
I mean, when Kobe pulled him aside after the game and wrote Be Legendary, Kobe saw something there year one. And I think a lot of other players did. They may not have verbalized it till year two, but they knew what was going on there with Devin Booker. And quite frankly, those in the building, you know, having witnessed it firsthand, when he came in that draft week and you saw him after he got selected, he was a different kind of breed. He just acted different than other 18-year-olds that came into that organization, 18, 19-year-olds. You could sense this guy had it. Mm-hmm. You weren't sure quite how far it would go. It would depend on, you know, that, but he had the it factor, the mentality, the way he carried himself. You just knew something was going on with this guy.
Was this before or after he threw you alley-oops?
This was before.
Okay.
But that,
I'm sure after that, he's like, didn't hurt. I'm not doing that shit again.
That didn't hurt. He went, fuck that. I'm done with being nice to these weirdos.
So you're
now.
I'm just kidding.
But that was the thing. He had that, but he also knew how to treat people. And I think that's part of the it factor is you got that mentality, but you also, when it was, you know, at certain times, you knew how to treat people right. So it felt, and it never felt disingenuous. And that's what continues to impress me with this guy is he's been driven. He carries himself that way. And what you saw at 18, 19 is what he's living up to now.
All right. So because we're talking about Devin Booker, I have a question for you guys. We're going to do a little what if, okay? If Devin had more stability early on in his career, how much better would he already be, or does it not matter?
When we're talking about stability, what are we
We're talking about stability within the Suns organization. So the fact that he had four head coaches in 4 years that, you know, aside from just the head coaches, the coaching staffs themselves changed. So he had constant rotation of people around him, people telling him how to like perfect his game, what ways to play his game, all that kind of stuff. So maybe, mostly from the coaching side of things, if he had had a stable space in those first handful of years, do you think it would have made a difference to where he is now?
I think you also, you know, don't mind me if I, or don't hate me if I kind of change this a little bit, but like, I think you have to throw James Jones into there because there was also an influx of different GMs. Mm-hmm. I think was Babby here when
so Babby was president of basketball operations with Ryan McDonough. McDonough drafted.
Okay. So drafted him. So you had those two guys, right? And I just feel like James Jones, along with Monty combined, have built this organization to be stable. Because of the guys that they're bringing in, the types of, you know, the types of demeanor and the types of character guys that they're bringing in. So I think you kind of, those two kind of go hand in hand. And so with what you're asking, I would say that if Devin Booker had Monty Williams the entire time, I would venture to say that he'd probably be on his fourth or fifth All-Star game right about now, just because I feel like he would have developed just a little bit quicker. He would have gotten into this mode right now where he's just so consistent with everything and he's not so rushed, and he just feels like he's in total control. I think he would have gotten there just a little bit sooner, because Monty would have told him, like, listen, Dev, you don't need to force everything. Like, it's going to come. I know you feel like you need to force stuff because you have a bunch of bums around you right now, but we're working on that. It's okay. Mm. Like, worry about your game and how you're developing. Don't worry so much about everything else, and it'll take care of itself.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate with this one, because I think from a stability standpoint, as far as if he had had Monty and if he had had James Jones and like even league average players around him, I think you're right. He would have made more All-Star games. I think he would have been viewed league-wide as like more of a winner earlier, because even before last year, people didn't think that Devin Booker was a winning player.
Yeah.
They still saw him as a guy who puts up numbers on losing teams, because that's what he did for the first 4 years of his career. But I do think that his particular path and how driven he was, and how, you know, with each passing season, he kind of addressed one area of his game that the critics pointed out. You know, first it was he's not an efficient scorer. And then when he became an efficient scorer, it was, well, he only scores for himself. And then he became a playmaker and was basically their point guard for a whole season. And, you know, it's been one thing after another. He doesn't play defense. He's not on a winning team. He can't shoot threes. Like, every single year, it's been one aspect of his game that he's addressed. And I think, unfortunately, kind of like playing in a vacuum without having teammates around him and having to force himself to be great and force those around him to be better, I think that kind of helped with his drive, helped with him as far as addressing certain elements of his game and improving on them. I think it was because he's always talking about, you know, iron sharpens iron, and, you know, under pressure, diamonds are made, that type of thing.
And cliche after cliche.
Yes,
after
every cliche. Sports cliche, yeah. Devin Booker has. He's thrown it out there. But I think in his case, that after being a winner throughout his basketball career and having to be on these miserable, awful losing teams, I think that added to his drive. I think it still would have been there if he had been drafted by a winning team like the Nuggets or the Spurs or whatever it might be. But I think because he had to suffer through those seasons, it kept him motivated. It kept him grounded. And now he's in a place where he can finally build on all of these things he's had to work on by himself for so long.
I'm right there with you, Gerald. I feel like if he had been put in a situation where it was more stable or there's more winning, he may have been cast in that third option kind of guy, not given the chance to grow. May have been he is the Clay guy, so we're just going to spot him up. And if he has big nights because he hits a lot of threes, great. But I think given the opportunity to be the man, having to suffer through what he did, experiencing how bad it can be, how much hate you can get for dropping 70 in the garden, even though you didn't force the ball to you, your coach decided to take fouls and do that kind of stuff, and then the kind of hatred and hearing you're nothing but a empty calories guy. There was the line of looter in a riot, some national media guy
throughout.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. I think without hearing these things, he maybe does not develop into the guy that every offseason puts everything he has into it in getting better at that next thing. There's very much a I'm going to show you mentality to it, which I don't know that he has if it's quote unquote a more stable situation.
Well, hold on real quick. From the stable perspective, I'm not necessarily talking about winning. I'm talking about having a consistent voice who's helping you along from a coaching kind of perspective. Like, he could have still come to the Suns, the exact same teams that he had, but had at least the same coach for three of those four seasons.
But if they had the records
instead of one other.
But if they had the records they have, they don't have that no matter what, no matter what team it would have been on. Like, even Pop
wouldn't
have survived.
But this is also a what if situation. Sure,
sure.
So I'm making the rules here.
I want to go back to their point about the drive that he would have had he not had the adversity he's experienced in the first part of his career. I want to disagree with that, because I feel like Devin Booker has always had that, no matter what level. When he was at Kentucky and he was surrounded by a bunch of, you know, future NBA draft picks, he still had that drive to prove that he was one of the best in the country. You know what I mean? Like, he's always had that inside of him. And I don't think he would have lost that. I think you get, you know, let's just say for devil's advocate, right? Let's just say he did get drafted by the Spurs. Like, I think in that organization, there's a standard that has to be met. And he's striving for that standard, just like Kobe and the Lakers were, you know, when he got to the Lakers. You know the history of the Lakers. You know, like, hey, there's a standard to be met, you know. And so I feel like it would have been a little bit different, sure, in terms of maybe his growth. But I don't think his drive and his determination would have changed at all.
That's fair. I don't and maybe that was a misstep in terms of what I was saying. I think he would have been the same beast in terms of his mentality to wanting to get better. But I think he may have been typecast a little bit more in that situation. I don't think he becomes the leader he is now because he had to go through the school of hard knocks. And that you learn a lot on how to be a leader, how in some cases you can only rely on yourself to get better. You can't turn to a coach. You can't turn here or there. I think he learned so many valuable lessons that may have expedited some of his growth and turned him into the scorer and the guy that we see now, that I don't know if there was this constant shepherd, if we see that expedited growth that we do. It may have been more consistent in, you know, that it wasn't just one part of his game that grew, because it seems like with Devin, it's one very specific part of his game changes.
I would say this, though, like, I don't know about you guys, but my impression of Devin Booker, and this is why I'm disagreeing, is because I always have had this feeling from Devin that he is looking at where he wants to end up down the road, like 15, 16 years down the road, what he's going to be viewed as in terms of his legacy. And when you're looking that far down the road, you understand that, like, maybe not everything here really means all that much in terms of wins and losses, because you're striving for perfection every single night, no matter what your team is doing. So that's always the perception I have of Devin. He always seems like he's above it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To a degree, like he's always, to me, he's always seemed like I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be considered one of the best scorers of all time. Like, this is the process I have to take to get there. And I don't know if that necessarily changes depending on what environment he's really in.
For Devin, I don't think it does, because, I mean, I got there in year two, so I don't know what he was saying in year one.
So you guys didn't work together?
No.
No, it was on purpose. I heard she's gone.
I said not until Esco's gone.
So there?
Fun fact, I actually wanted to hire Lindsay and didn't get the green light to, so.
Wow.
Just, you know.
Look at that.
Timing didn't work out very well in our favor, but no, at least from my perspective, when I got to meet Devin, he had already started talking about his legacy in year two. And it wasn't just his basketball legacy. I mean, he knew ahead of time too, before that max contract, that he wanted to incorporate some charitable giving within there. Now, that's not a surprise. It's not like it's something that's groundbreaking, right? Like, we knew that was coming, but that's always been a part of who he is. Like, I think he sees the bigger picture more than he focuses on the day-to-day, almost, or the day-to-day is driven by the bigger picture, maybe is a better way to describe that.
Yeah.
I just feel like leaders in general, and all of us as people, the path we go on is what in a lot of ways determines who we are. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's those fair. Experiences determine different elements of us. Sure. And if you change any one of those for Booker, I don't know exactly where you wind up. Mm-hmm. And I know that's like counterintuitive to what we're trying to talk about. Well, no, here, but
it was just, honestly, this question sparked because over Thanksgiving, I was talking with a family member and he was pointing out how much better Devin's gotten over the last few years. And I was just like, geez, I wonder, would he be further along if he had more stability when he was earlier on in his career? And it just was a question that I felt like I needed to ask you guys about.
Well, and how much is Chris Paul? I mean, think about this. Who did Devin Booker, his rookie year, kind of got connected at the hip with Tyson Chandler, right? Because that was the one guy on that team that had won. had won it with Team USA, had won a championship with Dallas, I believe, had won Defensive Player of the Year. This was a guy who had achieved great things. So Book wanted to learn there. But obviously, a lot of those rosters didn't have a guy like that. You know, and then Chris Paul comes in, and that becomes very much a mentor. Even though this is still Devin's team, it's a mentor. Would he have been that willing later on to want to learn from a guy like Chris Paul if he had had different guys along the way that were kind of leading him? Or was there a desire because for 3-4 years he was playing with a bunch of guys that probably should have topped out in the G League and he didn't have that guy to be sure?
I feel like the desire would have been there regardless, because I think it's a craving almost to continue to get better, to want to learn. But one, you bring up Tyson Chandler as somebody that he was tied to. Another person that Devin has been very outspoken about, feel however you want to feel about this person, but is Earl Watson.
Yeah.
He, as recently as this past summer, has come out and said, I credit a lot of my drive, my success, my growth to Earl Watson, because his rookie season, Earl was one of his player development coaches, and they would go after hours to ASU, Devin, Davon, and Earl, and just work and put in all of that work. And Earl was in Devin's ear saying, listen, put in the work. Like, you are good at what you do. If you want to be great and you put in the work, you're going to get there. You need to have the confidence to do these things that you want to do. And then obviously when Earl took over as interim coach, he threw Devin to the fire essentially and said, go be great.
Well, yeah.
And I think that helped a lot. And Devin will tell you to this day that he agrees that Earl was a big part of that.
Well, because Hornacek didn't play him.
Right.
Hornacek didn't play him much. And then Earl Watson did throw him into the fire. And I think that you could argue that either way. You could say, you could look at how he wasn't getting minutes and how maybe in a more stable situation on a winning team, it would have been the same case where he had to work his way in and that motivated him. Or you could look at it and be like, Earl Watson was not the most stable of situations. So Devin Booker was driven to thrive in an environment where it wasn't stable. I agree with you guys. I think the drive would have been there. I think that he also has said, like, there's a certain beauty in the struggle that he's had to go through here. And he said, you know, he wouldn't trade his path for anything. And I know that that's not really what we're arguing here, but I do think that, like Espo was saying, you are how you react to certain experiences, to certain events, to certain adversity. I think it would have been a little bit different if he had had that stability. If it had been like someone like Monty and James Jones, he would, I mean, his growth would have been accelerated for sure. But, you know, if we're not arguing specifics like that, I really do think that he might not have been, he might not be the player that he is now, or the leader that he is now, more specifically, without the struggle that he had to experience and without that necessity that, like, I have to carry this team of G Leaguers. Like, I have to make everyone around me better and I have to make myself better summer by summer so that I can put Phoenix basketball in a position where it's relevant again.
I feel like from a leadership perspective, you guys are absolutely right, because I have said this before, I wouldn't categorize Devin as a natural born leader. That was something he had to really work to figure out, like, what is my leadership style? Like, what kind of leader do I want to be? How do I do this? So had he not been put in that situation, I don't know if Devin would have ever developed any sort of leadership skills, because he just didn't have to.
Yeah. Well, remember the circus that was his rookie year? This is Hornacek comes in, the Morai totally disrespect him, towel throwing, berating him on the sideline. They throw Mark, or basically tell Marcus or Markeith to go sit out at one point. Then Hornacek has to fire all of his assistants outside of Earl Watson. Then he gets fired. Like, everything was just a circus that rookie year. And I'm betting that probably drove him to internally focus and go, I have to take charge of what I can do. Going out to those gyms with Earl Watson at ASU after, you know, late night was an internal choice, right? Because there was so much chaos. Everyone was worried about their own livelihood. They weren't pushing him to go do that. He had to decide that he wanted to. And I think that had a big impact too, to just internally say, it's up to me. It's not up to this coach or that trainer or this guy. It's up to me to be the driving force. And I think that's a valuable lesson that you learn, even though there wasn't stability.
Any other thoughts?
I mean, Harry Potter had more defense against the dark arts professors than anybody, just like Devin Booker had coaches. Harry Potter still became one of the greatest at what he does.
Oh, my God. That's
if you're
so
going to be great,
funny.
You are driven to be great.
Does that mean we have to call Devin Booker Harry Potter now?
No.
Great books.
I had a potion so I could leave this room right now.
Oh my God, that was hilarious. You couldn't put a better bow on that conversation. All right, let me take 1 second and tell all the football fans out there that listen, I get it. I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you will be a winner when a single point's scored. So new customers who sign up using the code PHNX and bet just $1 on any team to score, they can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. The DraftKings Sportsbook app is America's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, it's secure, it's reliable. So if you haven't already downloaded that, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use the code PHNX, and after you place just a $1 bet on any NFL team to score a single point, and they do, you're going to win $100 in free bets instantly. It's that easy.
It's definitely a no-brainer. I mean, NFL teams score more than Sean Kemp in the 90s and Will Chamberlain in the 70s combined. So, like, it's going to be easy to get at least 1 point on the board.
Absolutely. Do you have
Hope you got that reference, 20-year-olds.
Hey, those guys scored a lot, not in their sport. That's the joke.
Do you have a pick of the week for us, Espo?
I do, and it has nothing to do with Sean Kemp or Will Chamberlain.
That's probably a good thing.
We're gonna go with the first field goals, fellas. We're going to keep that crew going, and I'm going to pick – I've been struggling with this, and we don't have odds yet. But for tomorrow, Tuesday's game against the Warriors, I think I'm going to go DA for first bucket.
I think that's a solid choice.
And I know I'm probably going to get crappy odds because the big man is usually an easier pick for first field goal, but I'm just feeling that that's where it's going to go tomorrow.
Saul, you feeling the same thing?
Nope.
Or what are you picking?
Nope. I'm going with the J train all over again.
Okay. Saul has not learned.
I'm going to ride J until I win.
You have not learned. I think I've won 4 out of like 6 games over this streak, and you bet against me. So that's the DraftKings pick of the week, though. I'm going to go with DA first field goal scored against the Warriors tomorrow, Tuesday, in that late game.
I mean, Jay Crowder is not a bad option either. I felt like Devin Booker wouldn't be a bad option with that one either. But that's the fun part about this first field goals club is that – night in and night out, there's not a bad option, really.
It's dumb luck.
Really fair. Is. But it's a lot of fun. So if you want to get in on that, be sure to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code PHNX when you sign up. That is 21 and older only, Arizona only. Gambling problem, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. New customers only. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. All right, guys, we've got the Warriors tomorrow coming into town. This has been one of the hottest topics on Suns and NBA Twitter, I feel like, over the last week, more so than anything. Everyone's talking about it as if it's a playoff game. Mm-hmm. So
it feels like one.
This is going to be a lot of fun. And I had this idea that what we're going to do here is we're going to play a game. Is it the Warriors or is it the Suns? I'm going to give you a stat, and you have to decide which team owns that stat. And then from there, we'll kind of use that to guide our conversation around how that might help in the Suns' favor or be something the Suns need to focus on in tomorrow's game. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Reminds me of an Adam Sandler skit.
Oh, that's a reference only you and I get.
So. I don't get that
one. It's a comedy album that Adam Sandler.
I'm not going to say it. Go ahead.
Okay. So the first one might be a little bit easy, but we'll see. Who has the better 3-point percentage?
Working out. That's for Saul.
Warriors.
Yeah, Warriors.
Warriors is correct. The Suns are 0.362. The Warriors are 0.368. How big of a factor is 3-point shooting going to be tomorrow?
Oh, huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, the Suns.
Because if you let you know who go off, you're going to have a tough time to win that game.
Look, I don't think you're going to put McHale on Steph, but I don't think it's going to slow down his 3-point shooting necessarily.
It's not
Steph that I worry about. It's the other guys on the roster getting going from deep that really puts you in a world of hurt with Golden State.
But the thing with Steph is, and this is like that one dude who it doesn't even matter if he hits, he goes 0-for-9. As soon as he hits that one, for whatever reason, it like sparks his team. Mm-hmm. And this team feeds off of his energy. And that's what separates Steph from a lot of the other 3-point shooters in the league is his threes are deflating. Like mm-hmm. You could have four guys right around him and somehow, some way he finds a way to get the ball off. And then you're like, well, damn, what the hell else do we got to do with this dude? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just different. And so,
and on the flip side, like you mentioned, it's like, damn, that was impressive. Let's go.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Right. Monty actually mentioned that at practice today about how Steph is going to hit demoralizing threes from 40 feet. There's not a lot you can do about it. It's all about how you respond to it. And the guy, like, he's taking 13 threes a game and he's hitting 42% of them, which is absurd. So he's going to get a lot of shots up. He's going to make a lot of them. It's going to be all about
shooting 6-for-13.
Yeah.
That's so crazy.
That's ridiculous. That's like what teams shot as a team back in the 90s.
Yeah. Like, I think the Suns can't fall into the trap of falling in love with three, though, just because Steph and the Warriors are doing it. They have to play their game. You know, that's where you can get in trouble is if it's, oh, we got to go 3-for-3, you know, we got to go toe to toe on the 3-pointers with these guys. And they abandon some of what makes them so good, the slashing, everything that they do. They still have to play Suns basketball, even if the Warriors are hitting crazy threes.
If DA doesn't do what he needs to do down inside, the Suns are going to lose. Is the way I feel about this game tomorrow. I just feel like DA has to have 20 tomorrow.
Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. I'm ruining the game.
My fault.
All right. Next question. Who has the better field goal percentage?
Suns. I think they're number one and two, aren't they?
Yep. Suns is 0.481. Warriors is 0.479.
No, right there.
It's like half a neck. Shot difference there. Yeah.
It's very close, but still, the Suns have that one. I think one of the areas the Suns have a leg up on the Warriors is that mid-range game.
Yeah. Because
the mid-range game for the Warriors is not their bread and butter. So if the Suns can force them into those type of shots, then maybe that'll be more beneficial.
Yeah, they're very much either at the rim or from the perimeter. Mm-hmm. Their mid-range game is not so effective. Now, when Klay comes back, that'll change a little bit because Klay is a very good mid-range shooter, but for the most part, that's what the Warriors are.
And it'll be interesting to see if the Suns are able to take advantage from the mid-range when they're on offense because the Warriors they're largely a small ball team. They do a lot of switching, and we saw this in the playoffs a lot last year. It's harder for Devin Booker and Chris Paul. They can target mismatches, but it is harder for you to get to your mid-range shot when you don't have a big on you that you're taking advantage of that kind of mismatch.
And to Saul's point, I think that's where DeAndre Ayton's going to have to become key and that efficient and effective shot closer to the rim, which we saw him thrive on in the playoffs in particular. They're going to need that against the Warriors for sure. But I mean, first two stats, you just see how evenly matched these two teams really are and the kind of slugfest we may be in for on Tuesday night, which is exciting because is there anything more you could ask for? TNT game, so you got the eyes of the nation on you. It's for the best record in the West. Yes. It's for the best in the West. It's to tie the record, all-time record for Suns victories. Like, it's my birthday. Like, there's everything you could ever want.
Oh my God,
on one night.
Tomorrow.
The only thing I would ask for on top of that would be a 7 p.m. start instead of
8. Yeah,
I was just going to say that.
You can't have everything you want. You can't always get what you want.
Facts. Okay, which team allows fewer points in the paint?
Feels like a trick based on your face, but I'm going to go with the Suns.
I'm going to say Suns, too.
Warriors.
It's the Warriors. Warriors are number one in the league with 39.6 opponent points in the paint per game compared to the Suns, who are number two in the league with 43.1 opponent points in the paint per game.
Can I change my pick of the week? Wish I had known that before I stuck my neck out.
Right.
Thanks, Linz.
Well, hey, at least it was before you actually made the bet. Crowder. So.
And that's kind of why DA and JaVale McGee are going to be so big in this game. And it's something Monty talked about at practice, is that this is a small ball team. The Suns have two, you know, legitimate seven-footers at center. They need to be able to punish them with size. Surprisingly, the Warriors, despite being this small ball team, are the best team in the league when it comes to opponent points in the paint. They're the best in the league when it comes to percentage of opponent attempts taken around the rim in general. They're just very good at keeping opponents out of the paint, out of easy shots. So it's going to be key for the Suns to punish that size mismatch when it happens.
Is it the Warriors' defense, or is it that teams just fall in love with letting it fly against the Warriors? Because it feels like their style of play is contagious when you start going up against a team like that, and you feel the pressure, like, they're starting to hit all these threes. More than two.
I see what you're saying, but again, this is the reason why you have Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Like, they're going to play their own program. Like, I understand what you're saying.
I'm not saying the Suns.
Sure. Yeah. You know, you're right. I think some, you know, like when they play the Timberwolves, I could see a team like that wanting to just chuck it up and try to match you face for face. But like, the more experienced teams just don't fall into that trap. They understand what their bread and butter is. Like LeBron and the Cavs, when they won the championship, they weren't chucking threes like at a crazy rate like the Warriors were. They were trying to pound the ball down inside because that's where they knew they had the mismatch. Yeah. And then you had that one dude, you know, Kyrie, that basically saved LeBron's sorry ass. Oh, did I say that out loud? Sorry.
Ex-NBA player Kyrie Irving. Yeah. The artist formerly known as Kyrie.
R.I.P. Kyrie.
At least I didn't say it. All right. Which team has the best point differential in... No, wait. I'm sorry. I don't want to do this one yet. Which team has a better defensive rating? Sorry, I got ahead of myself.
Suns.
Warriors, based on the stats we've heard.
Warriors
are number one in the league at 99.4. The Suns are number three in the league at 103.7.
It's great. This Suns team is a great defensive team. That's so bizarre. Still, I know last year that was the case too, but it is still so foreign to think that that's a big part of how they're winning. Yeah. Because when you look back, those other win streaks weren't because of defense.
You go back on NBA.com and the earliest year I think it has this kind of tracking data is like 2001 or something like that. The Suns were no higher than like 15th. I think that's where they topped out before these last two seasons under Monty, where they're actually like in the top five or top six for defensive rating. So the Warriors are a damn good defense. Like if you look at the defensive ratings, I think they're 99 point something.
99.4.
The next closest team is like 101, 102. So they're miles better than the next defensive team. I think part of it is the officiating this year has allowed a little bit more hand checking, a little bit more contact that favors a team like the Warriors, especially with an experienced defender like Draymond, who knows how to take advantage of that. But it's going to be interesting to see how two elite defenses match up with each other, especially because they're both two great offenses as well.
All right. Who commits more turnovers?
Warriors. I would guess Warriors.
Oh, I'll say Warriors.
Good job. It is the Warriors.
Tired of losing.
16.1 for the Warriors. The Suns are at 13.5.
That's the Chris Paul effect. I mean, he, even though sometimes it feels like he throws it away a lot, it's because he spoils us with zero turnover games at times with double digit assists. He takes care of the ball and it's infectious.
Yeah. When he turns it over, it feels like it's three turnovers at once. So you notice it because he rarely does it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last one I got for you guys. In case it comes down to the wire, which it very may well, which team has the best point differential in crunch time minutes?
Oh, in crunch time minutes?
Suns.
Suns.
That's right. It is the Suns. They've outscored their opponents by 36 points in 28 clutch minutes compared to the Warriors, who have outscored their opponents by 6 points in 26 clutch minutes.
I assume the Warriors have a higher win differential.
No.
Point differential?
No. So so whether you're doing point differential by like total points in total minutes or just normal point differential, the Suns have the higher mark. And they do have the better record in
the Suns clutch. Have a higher win margin.
Yeah. So the Suns, I think, were 8-1 in games that involve crunch time minutes, and the Warriors are 6-2. So it's pretty close, but
I'm talking about overall point differential.
Oh, overall point differential. Warriors have a much higher.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, really?
Which means it's less clutch minutes because there have been more blowouts. Exactly. Right. But still, Devin Booker, I believe, is still the best in clutch scoring in the league. At least he was at the end of last week. I haven't looked at it since then. But look, if this comes down to the wire, you've got two heavyweights in terms of these two teams. But as the great and wise Saul Bookman says, when you got CP3 and you got Devin Booker, that's why you have those guys. Don't worry. Even if it's close, they know how to close it out. And that's probably the differential here. Look, I know Steph's great. And I know he's very much like that. But you got two guys that are going to take care of it on the Sun side. And that's what why I think they're so good in those clutch minutes.
Yeah. And by the way, for anyone listening who doesn't know what crunch time or clutch minutes refers to, it's when the score is within 5 points within the last 5 minutes of a game. So basically any close game down to the wire, the Suns have performed really well, outscoring opponents by 36 points in their 28 minutes of clutch minutes. That's really good. And it's the best mark in the league.
Tomorrow or on Tuesday, the only thing I want, if it's a close game, is you just let anybody beat you besides Steph. Mm-hmm. If Steph comes across half court and chucks one from 1 foot inside the line as a game winner, I'm just going to cry all night long.
I'd rather you foul him and make him make the free throws than get the shot off.
Like 98%
free throws. I don't care. I'd rather that than get beat by a 40-foot chuck that he's going to make.
Like that 40-foot chuck is just like, it's just like a dagger. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it just sucks the whole soul out of the city.
Mm-hmm. It's the lesser of two evils to do it at the free throw line.
He'd rather drown. I'd rather you just put a bullet in my head.
I want the false sense of hope.
I might be able to swim out of this.
Look, I'd rather at least kind of feel like there's a chance and just know my fate's inevitable, all right?
You just want to drag it out. Exactly. Slow down. All right, gentlemen, thank you for playing my game. That was all that I had for you. Before we head out, there was a fun story shared at practice today about Draymond and Devin. And Gerald, since you were there, I feel like you should tell us that story because I think everyone deserves to hear about it.
Yeah, so the question was asked about Devin Booker's connection with Draymond, and he mentioned, you know, they obviously have that Michigan connection, and Devin brought up how Draymond used to send him like NBA socks back in the day, like the official NBA issued ones that Devin would, you know, wear for his high school games. He would wear them, and he and Draymond kind of developed their friendship that way. So I thought that was kind of cool. He was talking about how like the quality of the NBA socks used to be a lot better back then. He said he didn't know what they were made of back then, but he liked them better then. But he would always wear them for his games, and he really appreciated that, gesture from Draymond. Cause like he was saying, he was like, hell yeah, these are NBA socks. I wore them all the time.
Like, yeah. He was saying that he's like felt real cool cause he had NBA socks in high school and nobody else did. I thought that was hilarious.
Two things. Anybody else gifts you socks? You're like, what the hell is wrong with this person? Why did they give me socks? Mm-hmm. Devin's like, oh, cool, NBA socks.
I mean, NBA official socks, though, are pretty neat.
They are pretty neat. But I think my guess is the socks are still at the same standard. Devin Booker's standards have ever been raised since high school. I'm betting he's bought some fancier socks than he used to rock back at Moss Point. That's just my guess.
It's entirely possible. Also, I like that, like, Devin Booker, like, if I was in high school and someone gave me socks, like you were saying, I wouldn't be appreciative, but that just shows how mature Devin Booker was from day one. He's what, like, I'm 30 now. If somebody gave me socks, I'd be like, awesome socks. Devin's
but you
already
usually
there.
Usually don't hit that awesome socks until at least 25.
I'm 30 years old, and he was doing this back in high school, so mature all the way.
I don't know. I think if NBA star fill in the blank sent me socks when I was in high school, I probably would have been like, oh, this
that's
is
fair.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That's fair. I mean, it's basically you get to flex on all of your teammates and friends.
Like, because I'm 42, and if one of these guys sent me socks, I'd be like, go fuck yourself. Like,
I know what his
present is this?
What his Christmas and wedding gift is. Socks for days.
Oh, man.
I feel like when you become an adult, you appreciate
socks. I'm like, well, I'm guests. Also a very picky person.
Mm.
So
really?
Like, I'm not for people buying me clothes. Like, I buy my own shit.
I will say, as far as socks go, like, get me socks I can actually wear, like those fuzzy ones around the house. Like, I don't want those. But if you get me good, like, no-show socks or some nice crew socks, like, I will rock those.
Like,
sure.
Stance. Yeah. I'll take some Stance socks for sure.
I have hit peak old guy, right? My daughter gave me my birthday gift yesterday, and it was a pair of shoes. And I'm like, this is the greatest gift ever.
No. What kind of shoes are they?
They were, I'll bring them in. They're orange shoes. I'll wear them tomorrow for the game. But they're like, they're actually like skate shoes. Like,
okay.
But they're like real comfortable. They're orange, so they match most of the outfit. And she like, she's five, and she had all the symbolism for the logo on it. I'm like, all right, kid, you won me over. This is the greatest gift. It's shoes. Like, what has happened? I used to be like, if it ain't Best Buy, it ain't good. And now I'm like, sneakers. Wow. Michelin soles. This is amazing.
Yeah. Buy you some new like, Balance for Christmas.
Sneakers is a good gift.
Yeah.
Like that in itself is a good gift. But like when you start breaking it down, like it makes sense. I mean, shoes can't be slept on. Like, that's not a bad gift. Socks are a terrible gift. Like, that's just an awful gift. Don't buy socks and underwear every fucking year. My entire life, I would get socks and underwear from my parents. And I'm like, listen
this
here.
This is a necessity. Listen, this is not a gift.
Yeah.
You should be buying this.
Why are you wrapping this? I asked for socks like 3 weeks ago because I had holes in my other one, you assholes. And you waited for Christmas to give it to me?
This is what you do because you're a parent.
Jerk.
Oh, these are provisions, not gifts.
Right?
It's like, here's a bottle of water. Merry Christmas. Screw you.
Oh, by the way, in your stocking, we put your inhaler. Yeah. Congrats on your asthma.
We refilled that shit.
Like, are you serious? Like, Jesus.
There's a
your diabetes medications under the tree too.
Right? I got some more needles for you.
Oh my God.
Got your loaf of bread. You mean groceries?
Okay, but low-key though, the video of little kids getting like an avocado wrap for Christmas and they're like, oh my God, I love it. It's the cutest thing.
Have you
seen
the English kids that got a banana and an orange?
And
then the kid like unwraps it and he's like, a banana? So I got the banana for Christmas.
So what we're saying is we're just major assholes because we weren't appreciative of the kind things we got.
Yeah, maybe.
More or less.
All right. Well, if you would like to give better Christmas gifts and you are listening to this on Monday, November 29th, there are major deals happening in the PHNX locker.
Yeah, you only got
up
like
to 50% off. So if you're listening to this today, be sure to head over there real quick if you haven't already to pick that up and check it out. And
deal ends at midnight.
If you're listening to this on Tuesday, you're shit out of luck. We're sorry.
Sorry. Yeah.
And don't email me asking for a discount.
But yeah, phnxlocker.com to check out all of the deals we have going over there. And if you're not a member and you become a member at gophnx.com, in addition to your membership, you'll also get a $60 gift card that you can use in the locker. So you basically get your money back from the membership in gift cards to the locker. Plus you add on up to 50% off in there. Like, you can get hooked up legit or hook somebody else up legit with this deal. So take advantage of it.
If you do listen on Tuesday and you want something, you know, because you're not getting anything, email Jacob at gophnx.com. That's Jacob at gophnx.com. He's sitting off mic and just gave me a really dirty look, which I think was exactly the point of doing that. So make sure to flood his inbox on Tuesday.
Thank you guys for tuning in. We will see you tomorrow on Tuesday, the 30th, as the Suns take on the Warriors. Pregame will be at 7:30 on our YouTube page. So come hang out with us. And then, of course, after the game, we'll be back on our YouTube page as well.
And a quick reminder, big drop involving Lindsay on tomorrow's pre and post-game show.
This is the greatest thing since sliced bread. I promise you
people.
You guys
are going to be so disappointed.
No, you're not. I promise you. Gerald, are people going to be disappointed?
Not at all.
See, that's three out of four of us, and the one that is involved in this does not think it's going to track. There's a reason for this, ladies and gentlemen. You have to tune in.
There may be multiple contests because to win something as well. We'll leave it at that, but tune in.
Actually, right? You know, oh my God. You know what? Espo, you did the whole puck thing. I have an idea.
All right.
Moving forward, that I'm not going to give away until tomorrow.
But we'll discuss it after. But this is worth it. If you only tune in for one episode, the rest of 2021, it's this one. And it has nothing to do with the Suns Warriors matchup.
You guys are going to, they're going to be so disappointed.
No, they're not. I'm telling you, they're not. They're going to love this. The internet, right. The Cove crazies are going to go another level of crazy.
We'll find out tomorrow. Thank you again for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter at LindsaySmithAZ. You can follow Saul on Twitter at Saul_Bookman. Espo, the underscore there is there
for the anticipation that's building about what we're revealing tomorrow.
You can follow Gerald on Twitter at Gerald Bourget. And of course, you can follow Espo on Twitter at Espo. Espo, take us home.
Hold on. The Gerald is there because it's his first name. Ahoy, hoy, everybody.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.